Welcome to Meaning Over Money, a different kind of financial podcast where money is never about money.
Welcome. Thank you so much for tuning in. We are so excited to have you here. We hope you're having an awesome week. And regardless of when you're listening to this, we hope it adds value to your journey. And if it does add value, it would mean the world to us if you would share with a friend or to rate and review our show. It makes a big difference. In my prior career, investing in commercial real estates, putting portfolios of properties together for clients, one of the main responsibilities of my job was to manage risk. Because anytime I invested in a real estate property, there was risk. And our goal was not to eliminate risk. You can't eliminate risk. Your goal is to manage it. If I wanted to eliminate risk, I would have just not invested in anything, and we would have just had our money sitting in a safe account where nothing bad can happen to it. But that's not what our job was. Our job was to manage it, to get a good return, to get the clients what they're looking for, help them achieve what they're trying to achieve, and manage risk along the way. You couldn't manage risk out of it. Your job was just to manage risk. And life is the same way. Every day we take risks. When we get into our car, we're taking a risk. When we get into our car and we leave our home, we're taking a risk. But our job isn't to eliminate the risk. If we wanted to eliminate the risk, we would just go torch our car and lock ourselves in our home for the rest of our lives. That's not living. So we can eliminate the risk of driving by never driving again or never getting in a car again. That's not reasonable. Our job is to manage the risk. We can wear our seatbelts. We can check our mirrors. We can drive at a reasonable speed. We can keep an eye on our blind spots. Each of these acts is a measure to reduce risk. None of it eliminates risk, but it does manage the risk. Risk is a topic I think about a lot. And I think about it in my work and in my life and just all the different areas. It's from spending 15 years having a primary piece of my life to manage risk, being paid to manage risk. One thing has become clear in my journey of life is that humans, generally speaking, humans are really bad at assessing risk. Sometimes we grossly overestimate risk. Sometimes we grossly underestimate risk. And I think there's one big reason I'm writing an article right now for Brains Magazine. It's a publication. It's a business magazine based in Europe. And I'm writing an article right now about this topic. I've been thinking about some of these ideas. And I ask myself, why? Why are we as humans so bad at measuring risk? I think the primary reason is that we measure risk with our feelings. We measure risk with fear. Risk is scary, and that's a fear-based emotion. And whenever we're measuring something with fear, whenever fear dictates something for us, it often is not a healthy way to navigate life. And I believe that fear is what helps us measure risk, and that's a faulty measure. So if fear is counterproductive in measuring risk, we need a new baseline. We need a new methodology. How do we measure risk if we're going to take fear out of it? Because I am proposing we take fear out of the risk assessment. For me, there's two components. The first one is, what's the probability of something bad happening? Sometimes that's easy. If you're flipping a coin, and you pick one side, you know the probability of being right is 50%. The probability of being wrong is 50%. You know that. You know if you're going to choose heads, there's a 50% probability you're right, and there's a 50% probability you're wrong. The second piece is this. In the event the downside happens, how severe is it? How bad can it get? That's another tricky one. Sometimes we know the probability. For example, we know when we flip a coin, we have a 50% chance of being right, a 50% chance of being wrong. The question is, what happens when you're wrong? What's the consequences? What's the downside? That's the part that can be very tricky. And it's contextual to whatever area of life we're talking about. I'm gonna share a real life example of something that happened to my family recently and how it played out, how I thought through it. We were on our way to our friends, Tanner and Taitlin's wedding, dear friends of ours. And more importantly, in this conversation, my kids were ring bearers. No, I should clarify, they were ring security. I don't think they were gonna be trusted with the ring. So they were the security for the ring. They were very cute. It was a very special day. But our family loads up into my wife's vehicle, her SUV, and we're on our way. I think it's about a 30-minute drive to this wedding, and we're on our way to go to pictures. These two little cute boys are in the wedding pictures before the ceremony, and we need to get them there for pictures because, well, that's what we were supposed to do. And when the bride says, this is what we're doing, this is what we're doing. As we are venturing down the road a few minutes out from our home, I realize that the fuel light's on. We're almost out of gas. So I ask my wife, hey, Sarah, how long has this light been on? And she goes, I have no idea. I'm like, oh, great. Okay. So in that moment, we got a problem. We're going to drive 30 minutes into the country to this wedding facility, and we're almost out of gas. And in my brain, I'm kind of thinking, all right, we have maybe a 90% chance of having a non-issue. We have a 10% chance of running out of gas. And my wife says, it'll probably be fine. We should just go. It'll probably be fine. We want to be on time. If we see it through and we just drive to the wedding, we'll be exactly on time. Which honestly, in my household with Sarah, that's kind of a win. Sorry, Sarah. We'll be on time. So if we just keep going, we'll be on time, or we'll run out of gas. And so in my brain, I'm kind of processing, okay, if we see it through, 90% chance, it's a non-issue, it's a nothing burger, nothing bad happens, nobody even knows. Or we run out of gas, which will probably take, I don't know, it probably knocks 90 minutes off our day. So those are a couple different data points we need to know. What are the probabilities? A 90% chance of success, 10% chance of failure. Great, good to know. But, and that's where my wife stops. My wife says, it'll probably be fine, we should go. But that second part matters. What's the severity of each scenario? Now, in my world, we look at things through the lens of an average, an expected outcome. And you do that by taking a weighted average of your outcomes. So in this case, you would take 90% chance, so 0.9 times 0 minutes late, plus a 10% chance, 0.1 times 90 minutes. That means your expected outcome would be, on average, you'll be 9 minutes late. If you were to play this scenario out countless times, on average, you would be 9 minutes late to the wedding. That's a good number to know. That is a good number to understand what the expected outcome is mathematically. 9 minutes wouldn't be a bad outcome. Taitlin might roll her eyes at us, and she might be a little bit unsatisfied, but we make it. We're good. Here's the problem. We don't have countless opportunities in which to have an average. We have a one of one opportunity. This is happening one time. We're either going to be on time or we're going to absolutely ruin her pictures. Those are the two outcomes. And as I'm sitting in the driver's seat trying to make a decision, having my wife tell me we should just keep going, I'm thinking about this, understanding what our reality is here. And I understand our best case scenario, I understand our worst case scenario, and I understand the mathematical expected average. And in that moment, I have to make a decision. And that decision is this. My downside was too great to take the risk. That was a very real risk. And that had to matter. That had to factor in to the conversation. I had a 1 in 10 chance of ruining their pictures, which I didn't want to do. Thus, I couldn't take that risk. So we stopped and got gas. So we shifted the probabilities to a 90% chance of having nothing happen and a 10% chance of ruining their pictures. I shifted the risk to, we had 100% probability of being 5 minutes late. And that's what we did. But I had, and this is a silly example. It's a very simplistic example. It's a very one-off example. But it illustrates that we have these things that happen to us all the time. Every day we're taking risks. Every day something is happening, and we have to think these things through. Another example would be, you're driving down a 2-lane highway, and there's a vehicle going really slow in front of you, and you're just like, oh, I want to get around this person. I'm tired of going. I'm going 5 below the speed limit. I don't want to do this. And you're kind of on these curvy roads, and you're thinking, the first reasonable chance I get, I'm going to try to pass him. But the roads are windy, and it's hilly, and you never find a great opportunity, and you think to yourself, I could pass him, though. I could. There's a window. It might be okay. And you have to think about it. It'll probably be okay. It'll probably be fine, as my wife would say. It'll probably be fine. I'm not saying my wife is advocating for this. I'm just saying that's a common phrase. When the probabilities are high, it'll probably be fine. People say that. We say that all the time. And if it's fine, we'll shave 3 minutes off of our road trip. But if it's not fine, we'll be mangled in a head-on crash. And we'll put our lives and other lives at risk. And in that moment, I'm probably thinking to myself, not worth that risk. It's not worth it. I don't want to do that. The upside is not worth the downside. I don't know the probabilities exactly, but I do know the upside and I do know the downside. And I'm thinking to myself, if it feels a little bit questionable, it means the probability is probably not as high as I want it to be. And we venture into these decisions every day. Let's use a financial example. One of the craziest things that I hear people talk about is a financial advisor asking them what the risk tolerance is. They're thinking about, okay, we need to invest. And sometimes you can even do this in your company 401k. It'll say, what's your tolerance for risk? Well, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to use fear to make that decision. And in your instinctual gut is going to say, I don't want to lose money. I don't want to lose money. I'm risk averse. And then you think to yourself, I'm scared because I know I have all these friends around me that are buying and selling stocks and crypto and doing all these things, and I'm watching them get hurt. That feels risky. I don't want risk. And so they make selections to these questions that are fear-based, without really understanding, what are we talking about for risk here? What does risk even mean? It is true the stock market will face many wild swings. The stock market is crazy. It's a wild ride. I was looking up some statistics as I was researching this article. And in the history of the stock market will fall at least 10% every 19 months. Every 19 months, on average, you will experience a 10% decline. And you'll experience a 20% decline or more roughly once every 4 years. That does feel risky. if you're going to invest money and somebody's going to say, hey, by the way, you're probably going to lose 10% of your money sometime between now and 18 months from now, 18, 19 months. So in the next year and a half, you're going to lose at least 10% of your money. That sounds scary. But I want to dig into, what does risk really mean for the stock market? What does risk really mean? I mean, the definition, if you go to Merriam-Webster, the definition of risk is the possibility of loss. That sounds pretty simple. So going back to the prior example, the stock market going up and down, that's not loss. That's just up and down. That's just volatility. And for most of us, when we invest, we're not investing for the next 18 months or the next 4 years. We're investing for the long term. Most people's investments are for retirement. And in the U.S., most of our investment accounts, you can't even reasonably touch until age 59 and a half. That means if you're 30 years old, you can't even think about taking your money out for another 30 years. So my question is this. If you can't even take your money out for the next 30 years, why do you care if the stock market goes up or down? Why do you care if it goes down by 10% or 20% or 40% for that matter? That's where I think we're off. So the question is, well, what are the chances of losing? Because if the stock market goes down 10 or 20%, aren't I losing? And I want to share back to our original premise of measuring risk without fear. I can take a look at the stock market history. It goes back to 1870, so 151 years, full years of stock market that we can look at. And if you block it into little blocks, five-year blocks, 10-year, 20, you can look at it and say, okay, over a five-year period of time, how many times have you lost money? If you look at that, over 5 years, you have an 11% chance of losing money based on the history of the stock market. That's the S&P 500 since 1870, reinvesting dividends. It's putting all the pieces together. You have an 11% chance of losing money. Okay, there's a real chance of that happening over 5 years. And how bad can it be? Well, the worst outcome was that you lost over half of your money in 5 years. Okay, that feels risky. You have an 11% chance of losing money, and it has happened where you've lost over half of your money. Okay, that feels risky. What about 10 years? Historically speaking, you have a 2% chance of losing money over 10 years. And the worst possible scenario is you lost 14% of your money. That happens to be the 10 years ending in 08. So that's pretty recent. The first example was the Great Depression in the 30s. But 10 years, the worst is you have a 2% chance of losing money, and the worst is you lost 14% of your money. And that was a period that began with the tech bubble burst, 9/11, and ended with the great financial crisis in 08. That's the worst you could have ever done over a 10-year period of time. You lose 14% of your money. Let's go a little further. Over 15 years, you have historically a 0% chance of losing money. That's right, a 0% chance of losing money. With the worst case scenario over 15 years is you gain 19% on your money total. You put $100 in, 15 years later, it's worth $119. That's worst case scenario. Okay, if you're talking about probability of loss and then how bad the loss can be, well, that doesn't feel risky. A 0% chance of losing money? Okay, that doesn't feel risky. Or how about this? This is my last one. Over a 25-year period of time, again, 0% chance of losing money, historically speaking, And the worst outcome, the worst you could have done over 25 years, historically speaking, is more than triple your money. Historically, the worst you could have done is make 4.9% a year on your money, which means you'd end up with 3.3 times as much money as you started. And that scenario kind of plays out. Think about it this way. That's 25 years. So if you're 35 years old and you're looking at 60 as your ending point, the worst you could do is triple your money over the course of that journey. That doesn't feel risky. But on the surface, when we say, what's your risk tolerance? And we use our gut and our fear to measure that. And we say, well, my risk tolerance is low. My risk tolerance isn't high. I don't want to lose money. And then what we'll do then is we'll get placed in far less optimal investments, because what they're not measuring risk in terms of expected outcome over a long time. They're measuring risk in volatility. They'll put you in something then that will be far less volatile, but will provide a significantly less return, significantly less over the long period of time. I think we're measuring risk wrong. I think we're assessing it wrong. Conversely, I would look at some of my friends who they buy and they sell individual stocks and crypto and all this other stuff. And they've experienced up until recently a pretty good run. They'll buy something and they'll make decent money on it. And they'll think this is great. And I'll say, what you're doing is risky. And they laugh at me and they call me dumb. And they'll just say, well, that's just because you suck at it, Travis. And I don't think they're assessing risk properly. I think they're putting all their eggs in a basket or two baskets. Now, what's the probability of an individual company losing 75 or 100% of its value? Hard to say. It might not be high. It might not be a high probability. But my question is this. How severe is the downside? A lot of our listeners might not remember this, but back in the 90s with Enron, Enron was one of the biggest companies in the world. It was on magazine covers every week, it seemed like. It was crushing it in the minds of people. It was a can't lose scenario. And even further, it was a you can't afford not to be in it scenario because it was doing so well. And you can fill in the blank XYZ with any modern company and say, well, this company can't fail. Well, there's always the chance of something happening. In the case of Enron, there was something shady going on behind the scenes. And what had happened is a lot of people, including their own employees, by the way, at their encouragement, would put their entire retirement in Enron stock. And there was these news stories that came out. I was in college. These news stories came out when Enron went bankrupt and their stock went from soaring and soaring and soaring to zero. These people that had put their money in Enron stock and made so much money doing so woke up one day to nothing. I did an episode last year, and I talked about how when all this good ends and the stock market melts and the crypto market melts, when these things happen, that there's going to be some real consequences, that lives will be ruined. And I had a lot of my young friends told me I was a conspiracy theorist and told me I was a fear monger and said, Travis, this is ridiculous. And we're living in that right now. I got a DM from somebody recently. It's hard to talk about. I got a DM from somebody recently that said that they listened to this podcast episode over a year ago And fast forward, her husband lost their life savings, and he's threatening to kill himself. And wanted to know what to do. That's where we're at on some of this stuff, where we're not assessing the risk properly. And we lose perspective, and we don't think about how bad could it be if the bad scenario happens. Even if the bad scenario is a lower probability, and the probability is probably higher than we think it is, but the downside is so much more. We need to think about these things because they matter. I don't think we should try to eliminate risk. I don't think we should try to run away from it, but I do think we should manage it. I think we should, and I always tell this to my youth group kids. I always say, we're going to make mistakes. You're going to make mistakes. You are going to screw up. The expectation is not that you stop screwing up. The expectation is that you don't make any life-altering mistakes. And that comes down to assessing risk. We don't want to make life-altering mistakes. I make mistakes every day. You make mistakes every day. We always make mistakes. We just need to try not to sabotage our life with our mistakes. We need to assess risk properly. And this applies to everything. And I don't want to be negative about this. I don't, because then you have the flip side of things. I want to end with this. There's so many pieces of our life that feel risky that aren't. And we ask ourselves, what's the worst that could happen? What's the worst thing that could happen if we ask this person out? What's the worst thing that could happen if we apply for this job? What's the worst thing that could happen if we put in the extra mile, the extra work on a project or a relationship, or you fill in the blank in your own life? For most of us, the risk is very low. Emotionally, the risk is high. It feels high. Asking somebody out, it feels risky because what if they say no? That means I'm not good enough. That means I'm not worthy. That means I might have to be humbled a little bit. But really, what's the risk? When we take a look at this risk stuff through a different lens and we take fear out of it, we make wiser choices. I think we make bolder choices. I think we make more confident choices. I think we make choices that won't sabotage our life for the long term. So I hope that helped. Thanks for listening. Thanks for letting me process that out loud as I'm writing this article. I think this conversation matters. I think we need to have more chats about it. And I think we'll all be better. And we can think about all this stuff less. And we can focus on living a meaningful life and not have to worry about being scared, being fearful, or stressing about risk. So hope you have a great week. If you'd like to connect with us outside of the podcast, we would love to hear from you. You can find us on Instagram, Meaning Over Money, or me, Travis Shelton. You can find our Facebook group through the link in the show notes. You can find our YouTube channel. And of course, you can find Meaning Over Money, which is our financial course for young adults, where we teach young adults how to live for the meaning, not for the money. And that's at meaningover.money. And if you decide to buy a course, please do not pay full price. As our way of saying thank you, you can get 25% off by using the promo code podcast25, podcast25. But if that's not for you and you're not interested, that's okay. We're just glad that you're here. We hope this podcast continues to add value to your journey. Take care, guys.